Mr. Lewin in Reel 9. So could you describe a typical day at this stage when the recruits have arrived and what you were doing, and what they were doing, or what you could see them doing?
As far as I was concerned, you know, well, at that stage, we didn't have much to worry about, because we didn't have that many personnel. I'm talking about a quarter company now. Ours was yet to come. We had ours to come.
You were waiting for them to be trained, selected.
We were waiting for them to get the basics off. Once I got their basics done, then it was our turn.
But what were you actually doing, your job?
Well, in the meantime, we had to. You know, we had to get everything down on paper. We had to know the strength of the platoons, and what we knew we wanted to. We had to find out what the strength of the platoons was, and how many were needed, and all that sort of thing. And there was quite a lot to do before we even took anybody in, really. And then, of course, we were still responsible for the various employed people around the battalion in all the different places.
Employed people?
Well, they term them as employed people. I'm talking about people like Fruity Current, for instance, at the QM stores, ordinary room staff, sergeant's mess staff, officer's mess staff, regimental police, those sort of things. We were still responsible for them. That was still going on. That whatever their function was, it was still going on. You know, even though we had no personnel as such in the platoons. In the meantime, some of the NCOs were sent away on courses, like the signalers, and MT was another section. You see, we needed drivers. The carrier platoon had to be formed. We needed drivers for that. So you see, there was a lot to organise, even though we didn't have any actual bodies at that particular time, you know.
And did you see much of your officers at this stage, you know, quarters, corporal, major, apparently?
Not a great deal. Not a great deal, really. We didn't see that much of the officers. We used to see Gerlin, he was in and out all the time, because he knew he was going to be signals officer.
So who do you think was like running the battalion, you know, on the ground level?
Oh, we had a commanding officer there by that time. The commanding officer had been...
Can you remember who it was?
Oh dear, no, I don't know.
Can you remember ever seeing him?
Oh yeah.
What was he doing when you saw
him? I used to see him with the RSM sometime. He used to be walking around. He used to have he was looking around and keeping an eye on things.
What were the conditions at this stage? You were all in tents. Was that difficult to...
It was a bit, as I say, you see, it was all... Well, it was a bit untidy, really.
Because other veterans are talking about how it was impossible to march, how to march in the field.
Yeah, because you only had that... You had next to no road outside. And of course there wasn't, in Bedford you had a big square, it was lovely.
So were the recruits being, they were square by hands, or trying as best they could?
Yes, I could, yeah.
So you were directly involved in that at this stage in training. What about when the actual recruits started to filter through into headquarters company?
Oh, wow. Well,
do you remember anything about that?
Then, of course, we would have been...
Because this would have been your first contact with the recruits, really close up.
Yeah, that would have been... So far as headquarter company was concerned, when we got to Thetford.
Oh, that far ahead?
Well, yes, it's near enough anyway. near enough anyway, because you see, that was our first move. Thetford was our first stop after Scotland.
So at this stage, when you're just outside of Edinburgh, personally, you wouldn't have really had that much contact with the recruits from Durham and from Newcastle.
Not really, no. Only what you like to make yourself.
So you didn't make any? Did you make any friends with the new?
Oh yeah.
Do you remember any of them?
Oh yeah. We used to go and see them.
Can you remember any of the people that you got to know at this stage? Any new friends?
I can't really remember anybody. I can remember some of the people in the specialist platoons, in the mortar platoon, and in the carriers.
Who springs to mind?
I can remember. These are people that would have come in when the draft came in. The Jack Anderson was in the mortars. He was to become a platoon sergeant in the mortars before he finished. Jack was he was one of the intake. There was a corporal in. His name was Jupp, in the Pioneers. He was another one. There were one or two round the platoons I remember coming in. I knew as you know, when they came in first. And what they'd done, you see, what happened was, you see, they called for people to go. I called for people to go into these platoons, you see, and it was made known, and all these, as probably Taffy James would have told you, a lot of the signal platoon, they came from various companies, A, B, C, or D, and they were trained from scratch as a signal platoon, see? And that was the same with all the platoons. The carriers and the MT pioneers, all of them. They all came from the other companies. And it was made known that if they wanted to join the specialist platoons, they could do so. But of course, they were vetted first. Their own company commander had given the okay. But that's how it was done. We soon filled the platoons up.
And so, Did you have any? What were your feelings about the intake? Because they're obviously from a different part of the country, and so.
Oh, that was okay.
Did everybody mix together quite well?
Yeah. That was okay. We never, we would always get on all right then.
And did you have the? Well, most of the NCOs were still Beds and Hearts at this stage.
Yeah.
Were there many DLI men coming through?
We had some. Yeah,
so you didn't have many DLI men at this DLI NCOs at this stage.
No, not that many.
And was Thomason still making his presence felt then?
Oh, very much so. Yeah. Thomason was well into his stride then. Yeah. And Thomason, you see, was entitled to a batman, and I'll tell you how we got him. Typical Thomason. And there was a chap, strangely enough, he was one of the intake. You wouldn't believe this was a fact. He was one of the intake. His name was Smith. And I can't say that I knew him. I didn't know him. I didn't even know what his name was until I asked him. And Thomason picked him out, and he came in, and what happened was, he came into the, we had a tent, in the tent brought everything there one day, and Tyson came and Harry said, I want a Batman, he said. He said, can you put me on to anybody? Because he was thinking that he would get one from the Better Arts. So, because by that time, some of the intake, well, most of the intake was in. So, the broadhead said to him, oh, no, he said, I don't know. He said, you can't have Lewin. He said, I'll find you another one, perhaps somewhere. Thompson turned round to go away, and who should be outside the tent but this bloke Smith. So he said, Thompson said to him, he was wearing his sunburn. Thompson, he used to wear that. Not all the time, but some of the time. So he had his sunburn on, see, so this bloke Smith, he thought he was an officer. And so he said to him, Thompson said to him, do you think I'm an officer? So he said, yes, sir. So he said, right, he said, you can be my Batman. And that was it. And he was his Batman from then on. For as long as ever I knew Thompson, and that was right through to Vienna.
All the way through from 46.
All the way through. Whatever his name was Smith, but I don't know what his first name was. And he was an intake man. He was an intake man.
So as the recruits were formed into the specialist platoons, what was you were in the orderly room at this stage?
I was in company headquarters at Air Corps Company.
And how long do you think it was before you had a set of platoons, specialist platoons that were actually...
It was a bit difficult, yeah. I should say by the time we left, at least by the time we left Thetford.
Well, that's moved us forward quite a bit.
Yeah.
I mean, at this stage, when you're up in Scotland, obviously this was just after Dunkirk and the Battle of Britain was in progress. Mm. What did people think? What were people's morale at this stage? Because it was a very bad time.
You mean...
Generally about the state of the war, the state of the country.
It wasn't very good, really. It wasn't very good, really, because for one thing, the Battle of Britain was on. And the other thing was, of course, we were having this... We knew that the Dunkirk, that was about in the offing, near enough, wasn't very far away from Dunkirk or anything. We knew that we were thin on the ground, so that I would say, generally speaking, that the feeling was that unless anything untoward happened, he wouldn't have taken a very too much of an effort for him to come across them that little bit further, you know.
Were there any invasion scares while you were up in Scotland?
No, I don't remember any.
Do you think you had a response, the battalion had a response, or the new battalion had a responsibility, did it have any kind of defensive responsibilities that you can remember? Do you have any orders to do certain things in the case of an invasion?
I don't know really. I can't really answer that because I think I expect they did have some.
But none that you were aware of.
But I think they were probably given to the people at the orderly room or even brigade or something like that. Because you see, they were. It wasn't just the new battalion of the 139 Brigade of the 46th Division. There were two more battalions who were the same as we were. See, and that was Leicesters and Foresters. So I would imagine that the same instruction would have gone out to all of them.
Now, according to the battalion history, you moved in August of 1940 to Dunfermline. Can you know anything about that?
Well, the reason for that, so you have to remember that the intake, we'd had the intake in, and we were now at battalion strength or near enough. And somehow we had to get from Scotland
Right, Mr. Luna. So we're talking about Scotland and your time up there. What were your relationship with the locals, the local Scottish people?
Oh, okay. We used to like them. We liked them, all right.
How did you meet them? How did you mix with them?
Well, we met, though, I should imagine that the only time we met them, well, we met most of them in Edinburgh, because once we left Morton Hall, we stopped off on the way down to Thetford a couple of times, but we were still in Scotland, but it was only just a very brief stay. It was only, I think, it was because they were getting, we came down by train, you see, when we came to Norfolk, and I think they were had to get the train all fixed up and well, just get everything ready for the journey down. And in order to give themselves a bit of time, we stopped off in a couple of different places.
And that was still in Scotland.
Still in Scotland, so we had about a couple of days in, was it Dunfermline?
Well, the battalion history talks about you being in Dunfermline
Dunfermline,
in August and then a move to Dalkeith in October. Can you remember what you...
Dalkeith, yeah, we went. Now that was only another brief stay, Dalkeith. They were both very brief stays, but I think that we had a lot of. We had to make the journey down to. It was a long hop down to in Norfolk, and so. I dare say there was quite a bit of arranging to do, getting the stuff out of Morton Hall and getting everybody sort of so that I could get them on the train and we could all come down together, you see.
So you can't really remember much about Dunfermline and Dalkeith.
Not really. Dunfermline, we were in the town in Dunfermline, I can remember that, but we were very scattered. It was a case of having to be because of the necessity. I had to put us in anyway.
So you were in billets?
Oh yeah, billets, and it was bad weather.
And how did these billets compare with the ones that you had when you were in the Bett and Hearts?
Well, they were only mostly they were using things like empty shops and big houses and. That was just anything, you know.
So this time you wouldn't have that much contact with the people who
No,
owned
no,
on the buildings.
no.
I should have asked you earlier. You were working as the company clerk at this
Yeah.
time. How did you actually get that job? How did it happen? How were you
How did it
chosen?
happen? Well, it happened. It came about actually in Morton Hall, because when Sergeant Major Broadhead knew that he was going to be posted to be a CSM of the headquarter company. Prior to that, he hadn't had his instructions. You see, once he had those instructions, he came across and he started to those of us who were over there and. We were doing all sorts of things, like I said, I was a batman for a fortnight and putting the tents up and things like that. And he came over and started to to get in amongst us, you see, and told us who he was. And I have to say that I never knew Broadhead in Bedford. And I don't think, in fact, I don't think most of them knew him. He was one of those who, got recalled at the outbreak of war, I should imagine. My guess is that he was quite likely a colour sergeant, perhaps, and he's been promoted to sergeant major, to go to the 16th DLR, the same as a lot of them were before they came, the regimental quartermaster sergeant, and a lot of them were probably a rank below what they were at Morton Hall. They got promoted, and I think Broadhead was one of them. I'm pretty sure he was. The colour sergeant Day, he was another one. He was a sergeant before he, and I never knew him. I never knew most of the Bedford NCOs, really, not personally. I never met them, let's put it that way.
So how did you get the job then?
He came over and we were sort of, we weren't doing anything really very special. We got most of the tents up and he started to talk to us, some in groups, and he came. I can remember I was standing with a fella called Sparks, Reggie Sparks, one or two more, Ken Cave, Sergeant Cave, he's in audio room, a fella called Ian Neil, he was in the audio room. He must have been in the beds and not. I never knew him before Morton Hall, but he must have been in the beds and not, because he lived in Stanmore. And yes, I think he was. Well, I never knew him. And anyway, we were talking together, and he came up, and he told us. He was saying he was just telling us, what was going to happen and who he was and that. And he said, I shall need somebody to work with me in the company office. And he said, he told us the name of the company commander, who was going to be the company commander. And so he said, what do you think? He said, anybody? He said, I want to have a look at your handwriting. And also he said, I want to see how good your memory is, so I'll give you a little memory test as well. So he said, and if there were about, four or five of us there, I know Reggie Sparks as well. And so anyway, two or three of us said, we'll have a go. When I was one of them. So he made an arrangement with us that we should, he told us what to do. To report to him somewhere or other at some such time. And he left it like that, you see. And we didn't all go together. And he saw us all in, the three of us it was, and he saw us all in individually. And then when he came to me, about two or three days after the initial, when he first came round, he said, he said, well, you come with me in the company office, he said. And he said, you came out of the test better than the others. So I said to him, I knew Reggie Sparks was fairly good on the clerical side, because he jumped straight into another job, exactly the same type of job as what I was going to do, with a quartermaster, Newman. So, as from then, and he never moved.
So who was your commanding officer in HQ company at this time?
In HQ?
Yeah, at this
Major
time.
Major Barrington.
At this time, yeah. Mm. Can you remember what the memory test was? That the
I think it was him who wrote something down. He wrote something down and he put them in a special order. I don't think it referred to anything in particular, but he put it into a special order, and there were two lots, and in one of them there was a name in there twice, and there was a whatever it was, names of places or something, and he put it in there twice, and then there was another thing about the he wanted us to try and remember the list as it was, and he put the numbers down, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, such a thing, and to see if we could remember in which order they were down. That, I think that was more or less as much as it was.
And do you think your civilian employment helped you get this job?
It did in a way. It did in a way.
Put you in an advantage against people that maybe were...
Yeah, it did in a way, yes, because... it did in a way, because... I was working in the last job out at Dickinson's. I was in where they used to stock all the envelopes and that sort of thing, and I used to have to remember lots of things about sizes and shapes and all that sort of thing of the envelope. And so I think it did help me in a way, yeah.
So what kind of man was Broadhead to work for?
Oh, very good. Very good. I worked in that company with every sergeant major that came, right from the start. That includes who I think was the very first one, which was Warner, as I said and remembered. But I just don't know what happened to him. Something happened there.
Can you remember RSM Pickering? He was around at some stage in the early days.
Pickering? We never had an RSM Pickering. Thomason.
So you can't remember him?
Who?
Pickering.
No, I never heard an RSM Pickering, no.
Do any other of the NCOs from this era stand out that maybe we haven't talked about? Jimmy James has talked about Sergeant Stern.
Harry Stern, yeah.
And was he a Bitten Hearts man?
Yeah.
So he came up with you?
Oh, yeah, he came with us to there, yeah, Harry Stern, yeah.
And what kind of man was he?
Oh, he was a character, Harry. Yeah, he was okay, really. He was a Londoner. I may be wrong, but if there is such a place called Herne Hill, and I think it's on the outskirts of London. I believe at one time or other there used to be a cycle track or something at Herne Hill. I'm pretty sure that's where he came from, Herne Hill.
And in what way did he show himself to be a character?
Oh, Harry? Oh, well, Harry was a real Londoner, Harry was. He was him and George Gates. Harry was big, over 6 foot. He was beefy sort of chap with a very ruddy complexion, a boozy type, and used to like a song. And
what would he sing?
All about the London songs, and he was a character, Harry Stern, definitely, yeah. I got to know Harry quite well, really. In fact, there was a short period of time when Harry was in the water platoon, you see, and can't remember. I'll have to go forward a bit because it was whilst we were... No, it was at Rye. It was rye. It was a rye. Yes, that rye. That's right. We had a company commander then who actually he didn't like Harrisstown. He never did like him. But then he was never going to like him because he was he wasn't particularly. I wouldn't say that. I'm talking about Major Olison now.